Good morning, everyone. It is March 29th, 2023, and this is our weekly Zoom call. And it's also going to be a live recording of our podcast, so you'll probably be listening in if you can't see us. If you want to see the video version of this, you either need to subscribe to Coastal Drone Po Monthly, or maybe we'll put this one out on YouTube. We'll see. Anyway, my name is Ian Wills. I'm president of Coastal Drone, and with me today is Matt Matthews from Blackhawk Aeronautical Solutions Incorporated out of Edmonton, Alberta. Welcome, Matt.
Morning. Hi. Welcome. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thanks for coming on today, man. So you've got some pretty cool stories here. Matt is, so first off, why don't you kind of tell us about what Blackhawk is and kind of how you came to be in the drone business?
Yeah, well, I guess Blackhawk is a bit of a culmination of both my professions and my passions over the last, I guess, almost 40 plus years. I've been a radio control enthusiast since I was 8 years old, so that's going on 40 years. I got my pilot's license when I was very young with a full intent on going into becoming a military fighter pilot. Unfortunately, it was my eyesight that kept me from pursuing that dream, so I had to look at civilian options and got into a world of occupational health and safety. I also have a passion for photography and video. And so as you can see, you know, all of these kind of came together where I formed Blackhawk. And I'm a full-time drone professional. I offer drone services, of course, including video and photography services, inspection services, surveying, search and rescue, you name it. And then I've been a Transport Canada instructor now, probably almost... I would say almost 10 years I've been teaching a drone program. I've got a background in adult education. So in addition to kind of getting into this profession, I thought it would be very important to look at the educational element of it. I knew that there was going to be a lot more people coming into this industry. So I thought it would be more appropriate to not only offer my services, but offer it in a safe capacity. Which is another one of my backgrounds, as I've been involved in occupational health and safety and aviation for almost 30 years, I guess. So again, all of that combined has gotten me into where I am today. And I live and breathe remotely piloted aircraft systems. And I don't see that going away in the near future.
That's sweet, Matt. What's kind of in your fleet these days for equipment?
Mostly DJI products. I've got everything from the Matrice M30 to Inspire 2. I've got multiple lines of Phantoms. I've got everything from, you know, your Mavic Mini, Mini 2, Mini 3, all the way up to the Enterprise. But basically, you know, I've built that fleet essentially to address virtually all of the requests that come in. I don't want to be in a situation where if I'm asked to do something, I don't want to be limited by, you know, not having the equipment to be able to do it. And so, you know, I get everything from industrial inspection requests to live productions. You know, for example, yesterday was live. So, and everything in between. I've tried to remain a generalist in that capacity rather than specializing in a key area, which is why, you know, I tried to build the fleet that allows me to.
What the hell? Awesome. Is it still recording?
Yep, it is. I think it stopped and started, so you'll just have to
so apparently Zoom
splice
has
that together.
ADHD, holy crap. It just boom, clicked off and then reconnected on me.
No worries.
Oh my God. Okay, so I was asking you about fleet and so I guess so can you maybe succinctly just re-answer you've got, you said a Matrice 30 and the Inspire 2 are kind of your big drones. And then you've got the Avada, you said, and the Mini 3 Pro and the Mavic.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got the Avada line. I've got the FPV. I've got a lot of home built FPV equipment that I bought and built as well. And then I've got probably 8 or 9 different Mavics, you know, different generations of them. I've kind of collected them as I've needed them.
Wow. Have you had So that's interesting. So gear is always something that we get asked a lot about for new pilots is, what should I get? What's the best hardware to get? And my answer is always, well, whatever your customer needs is what you should have. What are your thoughts on like chasing the dragon, right? There's always something new coming down the pipe when it comes to hardware. What helps you make a business decision about, should I acquire this hardware now or should I wait? Or maybe like, how do you hold on to a drone for a couple of years, or when should you get rid of it? What are your thoughts there?
I think it's based on, like in my case here, I look at a drone purchase based on the type of requests that I'm being asked to do. So I'll give you an example. Most recently, the city of Edmonton, West Edmonton Mall, and a couple of other clients are looking for some vertical content, more specifically geared to some of their social media pages like TikTok and Instagram and so on and so forth. And I'll be completely honest, you know, the Mini 2 has performed exceptionally well for me. The Mavic 3 seems to be kind of my go-to for a lot of my shots lately, just due to portability, flight time, all the rest of that. But, you know, in my discussions with some of my clients, and I'm just using the Mini 3 as an example, in my discussions, a lot of them are like, well, we really want some vertical content. I'm like, okay, right. Why don't we use the Mavic 3 and let's look at cropping it in that capacity. They're like, no, we want true vertical 4K content. And right now, obviously the Mini 3 is able to provide that. No, not in a high-end production quality type environment, but again, when you're looking at putting something on TikTok, it's down-resed and all the rest of that, and the Mini 3 is fully capable of doing that, right? Like, even for example, like I do all the work for the Oilers, and I have done all of their drone shots of Rogers Place. Oh, I'll move out of the way here. So yeah. Rogers Place is one of my staple projects that I shoot on a regular basis, and as of lately, not lately, but some of the discussions that have occurred lately is for the next season, they want to get a lot of true vertical content for their social media pages. And so, you know, again, that discussion around the Mini 3 came up again. And so, you know, based on that, I essentially said, okay, like, you know, I was happy with the Mini 2. It did everything that I needed for the types of projects that I was being requested to do. And so I didn't feel the need to jump to the next level. So, with the request that came in, I thought, okay, the Mini 3, this is going to serve that purpose and give them that content that they're looking for. And quite surprisingly, for a drone that small, the camera quality that it offers, I've been really, really impressed, as is my clients, with the content that I've delivered to them. And kind of the same thing on the FPV side of things, is that's now becoming more mainstream. You know, I'll be honest, I've been flying FPV now for probably 7 years, with a lot of just my own home builds and analog and all the rest of that. And quite honestly, I never ever looked at it as a complimentary service. It was more or less, you know, I want to look at blowing some steam. I want to do, you know, something that's right, just for Matt. So I want to just go and fly and just grip and rip. And, you know, yeah, if I crash, I do the walk of shame, I rebuild it. I go back and I do it again. Well, now, as you're starting to see, there's this explosion of FPV content, you know, and the quality is getting really, really good. And now you're starting to see individuals, you know, companies that are specifically looking for those types of shots, to which I've actually had the opportunity of using both my Avada as well as my FPV, and provided some, you know, extremely neat close-up, kind of first-person, right-in-your-face type shots that have ultimately ended up being used in some of the productions that I've been hired to do. So yeah, again, I guess, you know, to summarize your answer, it really depends on what is kind of the flavor of the month for my clients. And if they are requesting, a specific type of shot or equipment or whatever the case may be, that's when I kind of look at, all right, is it something that I need to invest in? So case in point right now, I know a lot of people have been asking me, you know, Matt, you know, it looks like the Inspire 3 is going to be coming out here next month. They're going to announce it at, one of the upcoming conferences. What are your thoughts? Are you going to buy it? You know, right. What do you think? And, you know, I haven't had a chance to dive deep into the specs and its capabilities and stuff, But I'm going to be completely honest, you know, the Inspire 2, I've dumped probably $30,000 worth of, into the equipment and the lenses and batteries. And I'll be completely honest. Like, in fact, this very shot that I took was with the Inspire 2. And a lot of the commercials that I have provided content for has been shot with the Inspire 2. And I really, really like it. You know, do I see the need for the Inspire 3 for me? Unless I think I'm getting hired for movie quality productions. No, I think, you know, with what I'm asked to do currently, I think, you know, compactness, flight times, you know, those sort of things are really, really important to me. And I'll be completely honest too, right? Like, no, I haven't had any major oopses in the years. I've had little things here and there, but nothing that's been too costly. And I guess I just, my fear is I turn around and invest something, and maybe that's kind of the same fear I've had over the years, but I invest in the Inspire 3 and something happens. I'm not a large organization, right? I'm kind of a bit of a one-man show. And I think until the need justifies me going after that piece of equipment, I'm happy with what I have, and I've done really well with the equipment that I currently have.
That's a great point, right? You've got something that works really well for you, and why change what isn't broken, right?
Yeah.
And I can relate to that. So I was talking earlier, like, I've got the Canon R6 was my most recent major camera purchase personally. And prior to that, we bought a camera in 2013. Prior to that, we bought a camera in 2007. So every six, seven years, we look at, okay, well, what technology is advanced enough that is justifiable for the, because it's a major investment, just like you're saying, $15,000-$20,000 to get probably the Inspire 3, if that's what it comes out as. Mm-hmm. It's $10,000 to change camera systems. And every time in the digital space these days, like, there's not really the legacy support that we used to see in the film space, where lenses would be good for 30 years. Now we're talking 5 to 10 years. So,
I think the drone industry right now is kind of experiencing the same boom that we've seen on the computer industry.
Yeah.
You know, you go to unpack a drone, you've invested a ton of money in it, and already something else is in the in the works. And, you know, do you want to keep chasing that and have the best of everything? I'm not that kind of person anymore. Maybe 10 years ago I may have been, but really now, like you said, if it ain't broke, why fix it? And what I'm able to deliver to my clients, based on the requests with the equipment that I have, I can compete with the big boys, and I keep getting those calls. And so obviously I'm doing something right.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Well, thank you. That's I think that offers assurance, because we often get people asking, like, well, gear is the big thing. And it's great to hear that if you're doing business with what you've got, and just, like, turn off YouTube. Don't worry about all the influencers that are pushing out the latest and greatest. Yeah. Focus on your business. Focus on what works and what's real. And if your customers are calling you based on work you already have, they're going to continue to call you for the rest of the month, the year, for the exact same work. Unless suddenly everyone's into 3D aerial photography, like stereoscopic image, then we got to get something new. But a Mavic Mini, like Mini 1, is still a relevant drone today.
You know, and years ago, a photographer once told me, they said, Matt, the best camera in the world is the one that you have right now. And that's how that I look at it, right?
100%.
So if I've got a Mini 3, and, you know, that's all that I've got available, and I see an opportunity to take a shot or a picture or video or whatever the case may be, well, then that's the one that I'm going to use, you know? So, like I said, I'm not about running out and getting the latest and greatest. I'm pretty confident in, doing what I can do with the equipment that I have.
Awesome. All right. So let's segue to why we have you on here today and what you had to do over the past weekend. So you've done a few advertised events over the years. Like, I know you did something down at Calgary and you've done some pro snowboarding events.
Yep.
And then Friday, I believe it was Thursday night, you called me and we were talking about this. And unfortunately, two members of the Edmonton Police passed away recently. And so they were killed in action. And so there was a public funeral that was scheduled. So the Edmonton Police Service had a public procession towards the memorial service. And so very big event. And you got the call to provide drone services. So could you walk us through kind of how that went to the point from the call to realistically, like, how do you pull something like this off? And what did it look like?
Well, I got to tell you, it's to begin with, when my head hit the pillow on Monday night, I bet you I slept till easily almost lunchtime yesterday. I was just so mentally and physically drained. You know, on the previous 4 days, it was just an absolute whirlwind. So obviously that's the ending. Let's kind of talk a little bit about, you know, how this all went down. So on Thursday afternoon, I ended up getting a phone call from a production manager that was their production team was hired to film and produce live the regimental funeral procession for our two fallen officers. I guess prior to them contacting me, there was a meeting that was held on Thursday morning, and EPS was Edmonton Police Services was kind of coordinating how the procession was going to go and how they were going to broadcast this live. So obviously to be able to put this together, it's an enormous feat in such a short period of time. But when you look at some of the key pieces being the ground cameras, you know, there's lots of cinematographers that are available on a moment's notice, you know, and the technology allows them to be, you know, in the trenches slash along the streets and to be able to broadcast that with the equipment that they have available. So to coordinate that and to get the ground camera crew to be able to, you know, kind of discuss positions on how they're going to capture it and how they're kind of going to leapfrog each other to get into the next position. You know, from large scale, it can be difficult, but given how they had planned it, it seemed like, you know, on paper, it looked like it wouldn't be an enormous challenge for them simply because they're working with the EPS. The EPS can move them around, so on and so forth. And then the discussion of the drone shots came in. They're like, well, we did not do this with our previous constable, Daniel Woodle. He was another gentleman killed in action back in 2015, I believe. And they had a regimental procession for him, but obviously, you know, drones wasn't really well known from that perspective. And then there's just a lot of things that they couldn't shoot from the air. They did rely on Air One, you know, to capture some aerial shots. And they did also rely on Air One in this situation, which, in all honesty, the camera equipment on Air One is not a production quality camera. It's a police camera. So they were limited in their resolution, and the camera operator is not he's not a cinematographer, right? He's kind of like point zoom, zoom in, zoom out, look, you know, scanning, looking. And so to try to take that role was a little bit of a challenge. So the discussion around drones came into play. Like, well, let's utilize some drones to capture different angles of the procession as it traveled from the legislature grounds to, again, I can keep moving, Rogers Place, which is where they actually had the funeral. And so while the EPS were discussing the procession and the use of a drone, fortunately for me, because I had actually worked with quite a few of the production crew in the past, you know, a lot of them was like, ooh, red flag, hold on a second here. EPS, while we appreciate the fact that you've got drones, who can use drones, you know, you use drones for surveillance and search and rescue and reconnaissance and whatnot. You're not necessarily a cinematographer per se. That was the first part of the conversation. And the second part is guys, can we even legally do this? can you guys just get a drone in the air because you're the police? And, you know, I think the initial response is, well, you know, we are the police, we're controlling the area. And, you know, fortunately, you know, a few of them had a little bit of knowledge on drones just because they work with me. They're like, I don't think that that's something that you guys can do legally. I think we need to talk to someone about this. And the person that we've worked with in the past is Matt. So, and that came from, you know, actually quite a few different angles. There was quite a few people that had this discussion, you know, with the EPS at the time. And so once they, you know, all reached an agreement saying, okay, let's at least consult Matt and see what we can do here and see if this is even a possibility. You know, then we'll decide whether or not we're going to include drone shots on this procession. So of course, you know, that leads up to the phone call that I got and is like, you know, Matt, this is, you know, so-and-so from, you know, the production company. We want to use drones for our regimental procession. You know, it's going to go from Rogers or from legislature up to Rogers Place. It's going to be about 25 minutes. A, can we do it? And B, do you want to do it? So immediately, as soon as that question came in, you know, I had a million things kind of going through my head. It's like, oh my God, like how am I going to pull this off? You know, because right out of the gates, I thought, all right, there's a couple things that need to happen. First and foremost, in order for me to even consider moving forward, I need a letter of authorization issued from a superintendent of the EPS, basically authorizing me to be that guy. So because
someone hiring you. Yeah,
absolutely. Right. So yeah. It can't come from the production company. It has to come from EPS because they've got controlling authority of the airspace because they essentially shut it down. So it became restricted airspace for the duration of the procession.
Like a CYR, you mean, right?
That's correct. Yeah. Yeah. So no drones, no micro drones, no nothing. The only drones that were authorized were the ones that were, you know, approved by the superintendent. So I said, look, you know, I know that this is the 11th hour and it literally is, but we need to look at this from a Transport Canada perspective, which is the second part. You know, this procession is on Monday. You're asking me on a Thursday, which basically means Transport Canada has to have all of the information in their hands for Friday morning so that we can look at doing this. And, you know, I can guarantee we maybe have 4 hours max to complete a special flight operating certificate for this procession, because after lunchtime on Friday, they're gone and it's not going to happen. So with that, go ahead.
What's the normal lead time for getting an SFOC from Transport Canada?
30 days.
30 business days. It was a leading question, sorry, but yeah.
Yeah, no, absolutely. 30 business days. And this is what they push. And I know I've had prior projects in the past where I know the lead time is less than 30 business days. And I've straight up said to the client, I'm like, we can't do this unless we look at a micro drone option. And they're like, well, we don't want a micro drone. Well, then you were legally not allowed to have drones there. So, you know, I've had those questions before. So getting back to this again, like you said, Ian, 30 business days. And again, this is going through my mind. I'm like, this isn't going to happen. This is not going to happen. So with that, they did get me the letter. The letter came late on, you know, on Thursday night. It was actually, I think it was about 10 o'clock that the letter came to me. Now, with that said, in hoping that I would be receiving that letter, I immediately went to work on my computer. Fortunately for me, I had a couple things going for me that made this, I guess, a smidgen of a possibility where there was a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel. I have done, as Ian mentioned, I have completed some SFOCs applications in the past, specifically for advertised events. So I knew right away I had a template of documents that I could utilize and manipulate that would address this particular event. You know, so I immediately began working, you know, on that. The second part is because I guess of my tenure in this business, I am, and I have had active conversations with many Transport Canada inspectors, you know, to the point where they know me. And when I call them, I know they're always busy and they'll answer the phone saying, hey, Matt, how are you doing? So I have built a very good relationship with Transport Canada over the last 10 years. I've consulted with them on a wide variety of projects. I've included them on projects. I've done, you know, aviation events, air shows, you know. So fortunately for me, you know, that was kind of the second element that I thought, okay, there is a very remote possibility that I might actually be able to pull this off. Mm-hmm. So with those two in my mind, you know, Thursday night, I think I got maybe a total of maybe 30 minutes sleep, all night. And essentially I took a previous application that I had done, and I went through the question and answer period, deleted the question that I had for a previous application, and then typed like a madman, the answer to each one. And then obviously the second part of that is coming up with, a full risk assessment of, what could possibly go wrong, and thinking of absolutely every potential issue that I could have, everything from temperatures to winds to, because I'm going to be amongst the public, what are the security measures that are there? I'm in amongst the buildings. What's the RF going to be like? What's the GPS going to be like? I've got Air One that's above me. What happens if there's additional drones? And so, in my head, I'm thinking of, what is every possible risk that could happen for the duration of this procession from a drone perspective, and how do I manage that? Right, especially because it was myself that was there, and fortunately for me, instead of the EPS drone division having their drones in the air, they actually dedicated officers for me to work as my spotter, as I had my drone, traveling down the road. Now with that said, line of sight was maintained, at all times by myself.
Right.
And it was based on the positioning that I was at, obviously given the fact that I knew the route in advance. And so with that, there was the logistics of filming, dealing with that particular spot, landing, repositioning to the next spot, capturing the next, set of images and video, and waiting for the other camera operators to get into position so that I could land, they could take over the procession, and then I would move. Because the other challenge that was communicated to me, saying, we want to have as many drone shots as possible. So I wasn't complimenting the ground crew. The ground crew was complimenting the drone shots. And so, there was that added pressure that a very large portion of this, they would, include drone shots in there. Now, this is all preemptive. After the fact, when you look at the production, I thought it was very well balanced, but
yeah,
this is the information that I'm being fed right at the very beginning. So
you're the ACAM.
Yeah, that's right. So essentially it was about 12 hours of paperwork from the time that I was asked, to do it, and building paperwork, building my plans, building my escape plans, looking at assessing every possible risk that's there, and having that ready to deliver to an inspector before they got into the office on Friday morning. And again, not even knowing if that was going to be enough. So we're talking like, just to give you the detail, like they wanted the full measurements of like what was the length of the procession route? What were the widths of the roadways from sidewalk to sidewalk? What was the width of the sidewalks on each side of the processions? What were the height of the buildings, like the highest building along the procession, in case I did have a disconnect and an RTH? Like there was all of those, they all had to be addressed, prior to 8 o'clock on Monday morning. Now, as a side note, I did send out a bunch of emails on Friday night to a few of the inspectors, copying in some people saying, this is what I've been asked to do. Be prepared for an onslaught of paperwork, and I am 100% at your disposal on Friday morning, tomorrow morning, to go through this in detail and fill in any gaps that I may have missed. Now, the good news is I didn't have a lot of gaps. A background in safety and risk management and aviation, and having done this for as long as I have, I looked at every possible scenario of what could potentially go wrong. And I had a full set of procedures in terms of how that was going to be managed. I even had certified aerodromes that were potentially in that airspace. Fortunately for me, because of the CYR, there was no other aircraft that were permitted in that area.
Protected, yeah.
Yeah, so that did help me out a lot. But the CYR did encompass a full heliport and their airspace, which was slightly north of the Rogers Place location. You know, the overriding factor was as if air ambulance had to come in on final. Fortunately, that didn't happen. But again, that was another consideration that I had to take into the whole process is, you know, they could potentially trump it if there was an emergency and they did have an air ambulance coming in. So again, you know, all of that I had to take into consideration. So when we fast forward to Monday morning at 8 o'clock, I had
well, just before done. You do that, Matt.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
So two questions.
Sure.
How many pages was your SFOC that you sent in, and how many cups of coffee did you consume that night?
Well, I think my wife actually filled the coffee machine up twice for me.
Oh man!
You know, plus a couple of Red Bulls, so I had those going. But I think when everything was said and done, it was almost 200 pages of documentation that was included, to the point where I couldn't email it to them. I had to use a Google Drive, upload that, and then send them the link to the drive so that they could download the documents. So it was very intense, right?
Oh, you know, wow.
We had drawings of all of the drones. Well, you know, I know it was two of the drones, but I had photos of the drones. And that was also images that needed to be shared with the EPS so that they knew how to recognize, you know, the drone versus a rogue drone. You know, even so much as, you know, I had my my bottom light was activated on the bottom of the Mavic 3, just so, again, trying to come up with something that would just distinguish it differently from potentially any other drone that was out there. So the bottom light was on so that when they seen it, they knew that that was my particular drone.
But I just had a thought about that. That kind of brings I've always wondered, like, what's the point of doing a wrap on a drone? Well, there is a reason. You could have it be like, mine's the red and white one or that's something right. like that. So, but yeah, sorry, let's move on to Monday.
No, and that's great. I had to, again, look at what distinguishing factors could I use to make it different than someone else. And that's why I kind of hoped I didn't have to pull out the Mini 3 Pro. That was the backup drone that I had.
Right.
It never came out of the case, but, you know, at least with the Mavic 3, I had the light on the bottom. So wherever I was at, there was officers that were confirming that, okay, yep, we see it. Yep. That, you know, that's Matt's drone. So we did it from that perspective. So 8 o'clock Friday morning rolls along, and I think it was actually like 3 minutes after eight, I ended up getting a phone call from a Transport Canada inspector out of Calgary. Now it was assigned to him. Fortunately for me, because of the connections that I have with the inspectors, I think he was already given the heads up saying that this is happening. Expect this all to be done and delivered for when you get in the office on Friday morning. So he gave me a call and he said, okay. And what's interesting is he called me up. He's like, Matt, number one, we normally don't issue an SFOC for 30 days. And number two, this is the list of all the things that I'm going to need from you. And I said, oh, whoa, hold on. Time out. Did you see the email that I sent you? He said, nope, not yet. I'm like, okay, check the email. Everything that you're talking about, I've got it. And he goes, are you kidding me? He goes, when did you do this? I said, I haven't slept. He's like, holy crap. he's like, all right, well, let's start going through this one at a time.
And he sorry, had Matt, you said this was Monday morning or Friday morning that he called
you? This was Friday morning.
Okay,
Friday morning, the phone call. Yeah.
Okay.
Because I knew that if anything after Friday, it was a bust. No,
exactly.
They weren't going to have it done and ready to go. So, so on Friday morning, we pulled out the matrix that Transport Canada will typically use for advertised events, and we went through each one at a time. So, you know, fortunately, I included that matrix. That was the first document that he opened up. I had the same, you know, folders replicated on my desktop, and I was just going to say, okay, item number one, you know, authorization letter from the EPS. Let's open this up. You know, you can see that this is signed by the superintendent. This is giving me the green light to operate in this area. You know, item number two, no tammed area. Here's the CYR that's been issued for this, you know, and essentially we kind of went through all of the documents together, which took probably about 4 hours. It was just before lunchtime, before the final document was reviewed. And, you know, that also came with a couple of little changes, you know, and I brought that one up, you know, what's the total length of the procession route? What's the length of the roadways or the width of the roadways? What's the width of the sidewalks? Where do we anticipate, you know, the most amount of, you know, the public to be in? And, you know, on that procession route, let's talk about the building. So I actually had to go and figure out the heights of the buildings, wow. You know, using some of the different applications that I've got. And, you know, on top of that as well, like is on the weekend, I did drive the route a couple times only because I needed to know, you know, the tower, a lot of the towers down there have cellular transmission antennas and stuff that are attached to that. And I was aware of one particular area that I had done on a different project unrelated to this. And I remember going by that and all of a sudden, bleep, you know, the screen kind of went dark for a couple seconds there. I'm like, okay, that's not good. But that was in my head now thinking, I was like, okay, crap, we've got some towers that are here. Let's drive this. Let's take a look. And I even actually pulled my Mini out and I snapped a couple photos of some of the areas that I thought may be a potential issue. And it was either, all right, so at that point, I can't be at that altitude. I have to be lower, you know, or we don't include that or whatever the case may be. Right. So I did all that, but, you know, with that review on Monday or sorry, on Friday morning, you know, we did have to fill in a couple gaps here and there that the inspector felt needed to be done, or needed to be updated. But at the end of the day, they were completely happy with the process. And again, referring back to what we talked about, Ian, what normally takes 30 business days for a TC inspector to review, process, and approve and issue an SFOC was done in 4 hours.
Yeah, which and is that's the national record
I've ever seen. it was incredible. You know, and then on top of that too, there's a second part to this, and I know that this is now internal with EPS in the city of Edmonton. But when you're flying in the city, if you are taking off or landing on city-owned property, you have to have a permit. So this was almost in parallel to the SFOC application preparation. I had to do the same thing for the city of Edmonton, you know, and they wouldn't approve it unless an SFOC was given.
So, chicken and egg.
Well, yeah. So they had everything all up to the SFOC, but once the SFOC was given, then that was issued to the city of Edmonton, and then you know things started to come into place. You know, and I had a little bit of time to relax on Friday. But again, it was kind of funny. I found myself actually going to bed on Friday night completely exhausted, but the entire night I was just dreaming of hazard assessments and all of the different components. So I really didn't get much of a sleep over the weekend because now begins the stages of mentally preparing for this and talking with the producers and talking about equipment. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'll be honest, like, you know, I've been flying for a very, very long time. I've got to tell you, I am extremely competent and comfortable in the requests that I have when it comes to actually flying. I've done some extremely unique shots and I've placed the drone in spots where, you know, people watch and they go, how the heck did you do that? But I'm not going to lie. I was just sweating buckets all weekend. Like, what if something goes wrong? What if this, what if that? It's live, it's nationally broadcast. You know, I was panicking and there was definitely a certain element of anxiety all the way up to the point where I finally landed. You know, my body was just, I was stiff and my fingers were, and just my mind was absolute mush. So, again, you know, after everything was said and done on Monday night, when my head finally hit the pillow, like it was just, I was absolute lights out, dead to the world.
So. That's awesome. So we're talking a bit more about Monday here. Let's walk through. So you're using a Mavic 3, and you were streaming it live. So you had the Pro controller, correct?
That's right. Yeah, I had the DJI RC Pro with the HDMI out on the controller.
And then how did that get from your drone to, was it global or CBC was the main broadcast?
Global was the main broadcast. And again, this was the discussion that I had with the producers. I said, gentlemen, you know, when it comes to drones and everything about drones, I am the expert. I will answer every question that you've got about capabilities, you know, distances, elevations, you know, line of sight, everything that you guys need to know. But the second that signal leaves my controller, that's your area of expertise. So you guys need to help me with that. How am I going to pull this off?
Right.
And so these discussions were held on Sunday. So this was all pre-production meetings and actually meeting with the team and running tests and confirming that everything was working and that there was, you know, minimal latency so that they didn't have, you know, especially because what I was instructed was the signal, once it leaves my remote and goes into their system, it actually gets sent to Toronto. They process it and then it comes back to the viewer. So obviously, you know, there needs to be an extremely low latency in order to be able to do this. Otherwise, the way that they explained it is, you know, the ground camera could be filming the procession as it's rounding a corner. And then if we cut to Matt, we don't want the procession rounding the corner again, right? Yeah. They want to be able to, you know, switch it to Matt and then be able to, you know, to make it look like, all right, this is, you know, streamlined and it's set up properly. So to answer your question, Ian, there is a system. And again, I have to excuse my lack of knowledge on this because this is all brand new to me. I haven't been, you know, well-versed on the live television side of things that much. You know, I'm just kind of exploring it here in the last few months now. On my prior productions, basically, it was as simple as setting up the clean out on the DJI RC Plus, the DJI RC Pro, not Plus, the DJI RC Pro, which you can do that. So right in the settings, you have the ability to output what they call a clean out. So that just removes all the telemetry and it just gives you the raw video in that form. Now, the output was set to a 1080p 60 frame per second is what the output on the HDMI was, HDMI out. Now, the HDMI is an HDMI mini. So I had to purchase an adapter to go from my mini to a full. And then I also, you know, again, this is me thinking, all right, what happens if that disconnects? Like, what do I need to do? So I had gaffer tape and I had that thing just taped to the remote and the connection taped up and stuff. So I was plugged into an HDMI cable that then was routed into a device that I just learned about this weekend. It's called a DeGiro video output system. And basically, it operates on LTE. It takes my video, converts it, and then transmits it, you know, in the 5G network off to Ontario. So they pre-programmed that, and it was literally just a plug and play. So you've seen the picture. I don't know if you have access to it. I did share it on my Facebook page. There was a backpack system that had, you know, two power sources that were running into. You know, I guess it would be the equivalent of kind of like your iPhone box that one gets when they get their phone for the first time. And that was in the top portion of the DeGiro there. And so it literally was, you power it on, you plug the HDMI into the DeGiro system, you plug the HDMI into your controller. And the second that you do that, they're live. And so they assigned a camera to me. I was camera 7. You know, I know Ian's going to pull that up. So yeah, so there's the DeGiro down on the bottom right-hand corner. You can see the boxes at the top. The second zipper is where the batteries were. And then the very bottom where your icon is, that's where all the extra cables and everything were stored. So you literally wore it like a backpack. You know, I felt like I was one of those guys out in the trenches with a modern day phone, but it was plugged into my drone. And, you know, you wore it as a pack and basically I was assigned camera 7 and, you know, that was the system that was utilized to transmit the drone video, you know, off to the production team so that it could be incorporated in. The second part of that was to ensure that I maintained comms with them. They did set up we used my phone, and my phone was connected to a Microsoft Teams call-in number. I had my my AirPod in my ear, so that while I was flying, they could communicate with me and basically let me know then when I was live, let me know when I wasn't live, so that I could reposition the drone and, you know, get the various shots that they were looking for.
Wow. And I remember you had a bit of a story about, so they gave you a camera number, right? And it didn't quite work out as planned. So,
well, yeah. So I, at the pre-production meeting, we were all given camera numbers, and I was camera 7. And I thought, okay, well, that's easy to remember. My birthday is August 7th, camera 7, no problem. So when they call 7, you know, live 7 out, and it would basically be like ready 7 and go for 7. And then it'd be ready 10, go for 10. So when I knew that they said another camera number, go for 10, I knew that I wasn't live. And that gave me the ability to kind of reset, you know, change the angle, get higher, get lower, you know, and move myself around so that I could essentially get set up for the next shot.
Or just
breathe.
And
that was, of course, yeah, or just breathe. That's exactly right. Because, you know, I'm sitting there and I was just locked up trying to, you know, make sure that I kept, you know, nice, smooth controls. And it didn't help that, A, it was windy. B, it was sub-zero, so my fingers were absolutely frozen. I had some special gloves that had just the thumbs and the fingers exposed, but, you know, the thumbs on the metal controls, your thumbs froze up real quick. So they went numb. I lost sense of them and, you know, lost the feelings and just did what I could do, but absolutely kind of reset. And anyways, while we were operating at the procession, I would hear, okay, go for 9. You know, I'll be like, okay, I'm not 9, I'm 7. So then I would kind of either pause or, you know, I just kind of hang there and they'd be like, okay, do your thing, 9, do your thing. And I'd be like, okay, well, it's not me. And I don't know what's going there. And then he was like, Matt, do your move. I was like, okay, sure, I'll do a move, but I'm camera 9. So I would do something and be like, okay, that's great. All right, now we're going to go to camera 8. Okay, perfect. Camera, I know I'm not camera 8. So I'd reposition, be like, okay, go to camera 9. And I would be hanging there just kind of, you know, ready for them to call me. They're like, Matt, do your thing. Okay, do my thing. And I think after 2 or 3 times, I thought to myself, I'm like, wait a second. They've got their numbers wrong. I'm not 7. I'm camera 9. Okay, no problem. Right. So it took a couple times, and I'll be completely honest. I'm a bit of a perfectionist when it comes to capturing shots, especially when I know that I'm live. And so I know that there was a few times, obviously, and I went back and I watched the final production after the fact. There's a couple times the drone kind of looked drunk as I was going down the street. And that's because I didn't realize I was live. What I was doing was I'm like, oh, I don't like that angle. I'm going to move over a little bit. Oh, I don't like that one. Oh, okay, I'm happy with that one. But meantime, I was camera 9 and that was live. So if you actually go back and you watch the production, or the part of the procession where the EPS officers are walking, you kind of see the drone going forward and I'm kind of just weaving like I'm some drunkard. And anyway, like I said, once I realized that I was camera 9,
he smarmed up.
I totally changed it up. And they're like, okay, you know, camera 9, get into position. All right, I know now I'm camera 9. Now let's reposition and say, okay, go for 9, start your move. And of course it's either a descent or a side flight or, you know, right over top of them, whatever the case may be. And, you know, and I would say that maybe 80% after that was all what I felt was really, really solid shots that were very usable for the entire procession.
Awesome. So a couple logistics questions for you. Sure. Like we're talking about the SFOC, obviously, like advertise event, you need an SFOC. It's a big open air gathering of people. How did you fly over people? Like you said, you used the Mavic 3, right?
Absolutely. Yep. You bet. No, and that's a great question. I had invested in a Transport Canada approved parachute system called the Flyfire. And they designed it specifically for the Mavic 3. And with that equipment on board and activated, that essentially, you know, based on the registration certificate that I have, it does permit me to operate over people. And right. That was, I felt like that was, an extremely important piece of equipment that I needed to have. And I had bought that a while ago, you know, knowing that there's some opportunities that I'm going to be flying. A perfect example, actually, is as the Oilers are getting ready for playoffs. And tomorrow evening, they've got a game, a home game, and they want some exterior shots of Rogers Place and 104th Street and whatnot. Now, an SFLC is not required for that one because everybody's going inside, but there are people on the streets. And so therefore, to be able to, you know, safely and legally capture those particular shots without going to a Mini 3 Pro or a Mini 2, I've used the Mavic 3 with the parachute. Now, that does come with a caveat, of course. There's certain operating temperatures that it's rated for. So I had to make sure that, you know, it fell within those temperatures.
Right.
But then the other part of it was, is while operating over people, the lowest altitude that I could actually get to is 60 feet above ground. And that is primarily due to it takes 30 feet for the parachute to activate. You've got your 30 feet for the drone to descend with the parachute, which slows its rate of fall. It's actually rated at 50 feet, but, you know, again, I'm having a background in aviation and safety.
Give yourself some room.
I always just like to give myself that buffer. So that was a discussion that was held prior, you know, as part of the production meeting, saying, you know, gentlemen, ladies, I cannot go lower than 60 feet. So that's where it's at. So I held my ground on that because there's a couple of times like, can you get lower? I wouldn't.
Yeah.
And so with that, I think they kind of picked up. It's like, oh, okay. So this is the lowest that you can go. And I'm like, yep, that's it. So you get what you get. If you want, I can, you know, tilt the camera down and change the perspective a little bit, but this is as low as that I'm going to go. If you want any lower, then you've got to rely on your ground cameras. But yeah, that parachute, is approved. I had that registered about a month or so ago, probably almost a month and a half now.
Cool.
And that gives me or affords me that option of capturing those shots and not having to worry about the 5 meter setback from the public.
Exactly. So the next one is how long were you in the air and how many batteries did you go through?
Yeah, no, great question. Again, the procession was 25 minutes long.
Right.
The first part of the procession began at the legislature grounds, which was away from my position. And the way the procession went, there was a grove of trees that was at the start that I could not see them. And so they heavily relied on ground cameras and Air One to capture those initial procession shots. As the parade continued towards Jasper Avenue, which was northbound on 107th Street originally, I was in the air essentially to kind of capture the parade coming towards me. So I was basically stationed at the corner of Jasper and 107th. And I captured them coming towards me, and then I captured them traveling eastbound on Jasper Avenue to move towards 105th Street, which was two blocks away.
Right.
The priority was on the two officers in the hearses at the front of the procession, and they wanted to make sure that I captured almost every aspect of that. So As the hearses passed by, I was able to kind of capture a little bit of the procession with the officers walking together, and then landed, knowing that I had to move to my next position. So that flight in itself was probably the first flight. I would say was essentially about maybe 5 or 6 minutes maximum to capture what I needed, because it did actually move at a relatively good pace. I thought it was going to move slower, but as I was watching, they were all walking to a beat. And so there was a good clip. And I think the other reason behind that is as well is I believe there was about 6,000 members, both EPS as well as emergency response services that were
RCMP,
part of that procession, and the RCMP and search and rescue. So I think they wanted to make sure that they got everybody moving along, mm-hmm. And it was also cold. So at the back of the procession, you know, until it was actually their turn to kind of get into file and move, a lot of them were standing around. and just kind of waiting for the line to move forward so that they could take up their position and go. But again, the priority was placed on the officers in the vehicle. So the first flight was about 5 or 6 minutes. I landed, and then I was with an EPS officer in a marked vehicle. So we had the lights on, and we were able to kind of navigate around some of the back streets to right. move myself into the next position. Meanwhile, while I'm being moved, there's other camera operators already in position to kind of take up the slack. So, yeah. So when I launched on the second set of flights, again, I captured the procession coming down 105th Street northbound towards 104th Avenue, which is this same road, which is essentially between Rogers Place and the two towers that you see in the picture there. And so I was essentially capturing footage on the west side of Rogers Place, kind of right above where my Blackhawk logo is. Was where I was stationed to receive the officers and the, you know, as they were coming around that corner, right. Which was a very short flight, only a couple of minutes, just because that was the most important shot that they wanted was the officers coming into the east loading bay, which is just kind of on the backside of Rogers here over my shoulder. And so with that, they now had a third position where I moved into capturing the hearses coming off of 104th Avenue, going northbound along Rogers and turning into the east loading bay. So I did use three batteries specifically for that. I could have easily used the same battery, but I just thought, you want something? Let's land, get a fresh battery just in case. So all three flights had three batteries that were there. And then after the officers actually entered into the loading bay there on the east side, then the production was officially off, but the production team then asked for additional B-roll shots of downtown of Rogers Place, a little bit more of the procession. So I moved again into a fourth spot, essentially just to capture some additional footage that was, you know, it wasn't part of the production, but it was given to the EPS. You know, just as some additional footage of the procession, because the procession was still actually going on, even though the officers were already inside the building. So they wanted, you know, the RCMP, the Calgary Police, you know, there was Edmonton Fire Department. So there was just some additional members that were walking, and they wanted to make sure that I captured that as well.
Yeah, some cut two shots probably as well while they were kind of doing commercial breaks or something else that they could reuse afterwards.
Absolutely. Yeah. Whatever they wanted to do with it, I just made sure that I met that need and gave them the shots that they were looking for.
Well, that's amazing, man. It's one of the story is incredible when you think about it. The fact that it happened so quickly and everything came together for you to make that happen, and for such a compelling reason to commemorate that event and to do it professionally. And that's kind of why I asked you on today, was to give our audience an insight into the gravity and the intensity that is required for an advertised event. It is. Last week a week or two ago, I talked about SFOCs, and I talked about like, okay, advertised events are simple compared to more complex things like over 25 kilograms and beyond line of sight. And, yep. and I was thinking about it. I'm like, you know, it's simple, but it's not simple. Like a 200 page SFOC for an advertised event is not a simple SFOC. Yeah. It's not a simple anything. So kudos to you for the amount of work you're able to do and the paperwork and there's so much front loading that's involved in getting something like this to come off, not to mention reputation and expertise and experience and skill set. So that's why I'm so glad you're able to come on today. We're kind of into overtime on the podcast side, and I was hoping maybe you had a couple shots you could share if you want to share your screen. But
yeah,
from an audio perspective, I think we'll thank you there. But if you want to see the footage, just hit up our Coastal Drone Pro community. Like I said, you'll see some of the video there, and maybe that's kind of like an after hours thing, but thanks for listening. And just to sign off for the audio, Matt, thanks for having you on here as well.
Yeah, it was my pleasure. Thank you very much for including me. It was an incredible project to be a part of, a humbling project. But at the same token too, you know, this certainly could not have happened without the support that I had from Transport Canada, you know, and from the EPS, from the production team. This is definitely, it took a massive team to be able to kind of drop everything and do this on such short notice. And I'm just really, really thankful that, you know, the right people were there at the right time to be able to make this happen.
And where can they find you online, Matt?
My company website is blackhawkaeronautical.com. I've got an Instagram at Blackhawk UAV. And, you know, I do run a Facebook page. I'm pretty active both on my Facebook as well as my Instagram page.
Awesome. All right. Thanks, Matt. Now to show and tell.
Yeah, you bet. I'll see what I can do here. Looks like I've got share screen option. Let's go into my Finder and we'll go to my Blackhawk clients and funeral possession. Just move this down here. Promo pick. So I can share a couple of photos here. So this was the first one here that I, again, keep in mind, I wasn't able to take too many photos because I was live. Most of the time it was video, but while I was kind of repositioning, I was able to quickly jump over and snap a couple photos. This one was a challenge just because the wind was blowing. So trying to get the procession with the two flags, this was the best I got. Either one of the flags actually wrapped itself right over top of the firefighter there, and he had to unwrap it. But that was the one shot that I thought was pretty good.
Wow.
Let's see here.
Space bar on them just so they go full screen.
Oh yeah, absolutely. How's that?
It might be in a separate window. That's all. We're not seeing. We just see your Finder.
Oh, sorry, my bad. Oh, so you didn't see that? Oh, sorry. Let's try this one more time. Let's just go to my screen share. Resume. Let's go new share. Let's just share my desktop. So if I share my desktop, that should work. How's that?
Yep. There we go. Perfect. Yeah.
Awesome. Okay. Yeah. So this was the second one that I snapped a little bit further back. This is actually part of my B-roll footage that I was able to go and just capture some pictures and some video of the procession.
Are you in the shot?
I am not in this shot. I'm actually, I'm out of the shot. I'm just off to the left there.
Okay.
Behind the police that are located down here in the bottom left-hand corner.
Okay.
Rarely do I include myself in my photos. You know, again, it just, you know, if you see me there, that's great. But typically I'll frame myself out of my shots just because, again, this is not about me. This is about what I've been asked to do. So more often than not, I'll find myself trying to find, you know, I'll take a picture where I'm not included in the shot. But maybe you can see that one now. Yeah.
It's a big part of it is, like, I find that if you see the drone pilot, like, drone pilots are always looking for drone pilots. Like, right now, the first thing I see is a dude up on the roof there that with a spotter scope on a tripod. So I'm like, that might be a drone pilot, right? So it's, you're only looking at that and not looking at the scene and looking at the image, right?
Yeah.
So either this guy is a sniper or he's a drone pilot. So,
yeah, well, these are part of the snipers that they had there as well. So just so you can see right here, I don't know, can you see my cursor moving?
Yep, for sure.
Okay. Down here, you see the black vehicle.
Yes.
And if you look really carefully, you'll see an EPS officer right here. It says police.
Yeah.
This was one of my spotters here. So okay. I actually had this gentleman as my spotter because I was kind of situated just off behind these guys.
Right.
So I had him kind of help me guide the drone down so that I was kind of at the eye level of the flags and the procession that was going. All right. And let's see here. And then this is just a little bit of a
setback
a wider,
there.
Yeah. A wider shot here. Just kind of looking at the procession coming up the 105th and turning towards Rogers Place.
Question for you. Did you run ND filters at all during the live or for your photos?
I did not run ND filters primarily because I knew the initial, I should have swapped them here. Like I should have put ND filters on here, but I didn't have the time. I actually purposely took the filter off on position one, primarily because we were traveling north and all of the buildings were casting shadows.
Right.
So I didn't want to throw a filter on and run the risk of it getting too dark. So I did tone down my exposure a little bit, as best as I could because I was live. And then again, just because I had taken it off prior to, starting, I did not even have the time. It was one of those ones where we landed, pad got thrown into the truck. I picked up the spotter, had it in my hands, had the remote in my hand and jumped in the truck and went to the next position. And in the process of getting to the next position, you know, I'm pulling a battery, throwing the next one in, you know, the remote stayed fired up. And then we get out, we land, or we set the landing pad down, drone on, and, you know, get the satellites and then pop it back up. So the amount of time was very limited. And so I didn't have time to throw the,
SF exposure on. Right.
That's... Yeah. Now when I did take the photos, like these photos, I did bracket them. So they are five photos that are stacked, you know, on my final image. I typically do that. And that does help me with the proper exposure. I can kind of tweak it and stuff, you know, in Lightroom, you know, before I export it. So, I thought that was relatively good. Let's see if I have anything else here that, go to desktop here. I'm not sure. I did take some screenshots that were low res, but I think I have since deleted those just because I did provide a couple of low res screenshots to an officer who is part of the production, or, you know, who's a good friend of mine. But, you know, let's see here.
And we're not going to critique your raw for the sake of the fact that it's raw, right?
Absolutely.
I can tell your anxieties because I don't want to show you my raw footage.
Oh my God, this is raw. Well, this is where we're set up here on kind of on that first one. And then, you know, kind of popping up. Yeah. And so this is me kind of lining up, getting my angle here. You can see the procession off in the distance. And again, this is me wiggly. Sorry. And I have to apologize. These are all in 3-minute segments. So I was cache. Yeah. So you can see I'm wiggly here, but
is from the controller cache, right?
Yeah, that's right. So now I'm kind of setting up and then there's, this is where I could see, you know, the initial shot. They paused because they were waiting for the hearse to catch up.
Right.
Right. And now and at this point in time, this is that example where I was drunk.
Right.
And I realized I was live. So you can see I'm kind of moving. I was trying to move over because the tree was in the way. And they're like, yeah, camera nine, you're good. Right. And then I'm like, oh, okay. So now it's like, it's go time. So now I'm trying to just get into position here. And, you know, this particular shot is as they get close to me, I will actually start to roll the camera to keep it in frame, which of course then jumps into the next shot here. Yeah. I'll go full screen again here. So, and I'll move this, but so I roll the camera.
That's cool. That's a great shot.
To keep that shot there. And then now this was one of the most important ones. So this is the members of the EPS and you can just see how big this lineup is. There's 1800 members that are there, not including people that are working.
Yeah.
So, you know, getting that particular shot, you know,
did you have any discussions with them knowing they're using the Mavic 3? Did you have any discussions about using the telephoto lens?
I brought that up, but I think it was just because the drone was technically camera one.
Yeah.
I just thought that I would keep it wide for them. They also wanted to show the crowd along the sides of the sidewalk. So I could have easily, you know, punched in, but in many cases they want that view to show, you know, the support of the people that are at the side of the road here. Yeah. Let's see.
Well, and from a producer, like thinking about it from like a continuity perspective, if they were to take your shot and then jump to someone else and then jump back to you on a tight shot, it might jar the audience because now they're like, well, is there two drones in the air? Like, this is so confusing. Like,
yeah,
because you have that mental, when you tell a story visually, you have to imagine your audience is experiencing from the perspective of the drone. And
yeah,
you don't want them thinking I'm in a drone. You want them thinking I'm there with like a God's eye view of this situation. So.
Absolutely. And that, you know, and again, when I fly too, it's important for me, especially when I'm live, is not to be jerky on my emotions. I try to be very fluid so that when the audience is watching this, you know, they're getting that question of like, what is this?
Do
you
I saw like, this shot. This is a cool shot.
Yeah, this is probably one of my favorite ones here where they're actually rounding. And so you'll see the shot that they included is I'm setting up to rotate from right to left. So here we go. So this is the shot that's live.
Sweaty fingers. So this is,
yeah, exactly. So this is where now I'm live, I'm rotating, and it's just an incredible, the line is perfect. The bulges, they're going around the corner there. You know, I think that was probably one of my favorite shots to represent the EPS, as they're marching down the road. So it was, you know, to be able to do this. And again, I'm at the 60 foot, this is the lowest I could get, to capture them. And again, it was just the enormity of it was incredible to watch, let alone be the guy filming it. So
that's awesome. I'm glad you were able to share that, Matt. Well,
yeah, thank you.
So thank you so much for coming on this week. And we don't really have much for a live audience today. Like, we've got Maya and Finn with us still here. I really appreciate you guys sticking around for time. Did you guys have any last minute questions that you might want to ask Matt? Well, you've got him captive. We talked about before I hit record. I do have to ask you again so that it's captured for all eternity. How many times have you seen Top Gun?
Over 100 for the first one. And, I hit the magic 33 here, not too long ago, about a week or so ago.
Well, then I guess it's safe to say, which one's better? That's the controversial question.
Oh my gosh. probably the most influential is Top Gun 1. Absolutely. Yeah. That was, you know, I was that 11-year-old kid saying, where do I sign up after watching it? Top Gun 2, definitely. I think it was very tastefully done. I do like the continuation of the story. So I'm really, really happy that the producers looked at it from that perspective. I don't know about a third. I know, obviously, from a potential franchise perspective, and now they've got a new audience.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's going to, you know, I'll watch it, but I don't think I will enjoy it as much as I did the first and the second. I think after watching the first and falling in love with it and, you know, living vicariously through that, I thought a second, you know, one would be incredible. And for years and years and years, and I think Ian, you and I were probably friends on Facebook, because I think when they finally announced it, I made a post and it said, feel the need. And I was just absolutely ecstatic to know that the second one was coming out. You know, and I was vibrating. I even actually got a ticket before it was public, so I actually got to watch it before the actual theatrical release. And it was pretty good. So
all right. Well, thanks, Matt. Again, like I said, it's been an honor having you on board. It's great working with you in the industry and seeing what really cool stuff we can do with drones. And like, it's not accessible, but like, it is in some ways. Like, you've changed careers a few times and you've found yourself in this kind of confluence of talent and skills and knowledge and everything. So it's such a cool experience. So thanks for watching, everyone, this week. Like I said, these are always recorded and uploaded to the portal. You can watch them there. If you're not a subscriber, make sure you hit that, not that like and subscribe, because this isn't YouTube necessarily, but sign up for Coastal Drone Po monthly. And you can get access to our back catalog of Zooms. We're at something like, we're getting up there like 50 hours. So you got some work to do to catch up. So check that out. Thanks again for watching. See you guys next week. Thanks, Matt.
Thank you.